Welcome to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind, here on the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul. My name is Junius Ricardo Stanton. I'm your producer and host on today's program. We started off the program with a message in the music from The Intruders, a group out of Philadelphia, part of the Philadelphia International Stable of Artists, with Gil Scott-Heron, Save the Children. And we have to find more ways and be more consistent, more persistent in saving our children from the ravages of a socio and psychopathic culture that does not value life, does not value black people, and certainly does not value black life, as the whole scenario of the recent Trayvon Martin killing, forced arrest of George Zimmerman, and the trial has demonstrated. I want you to stay tuned for our guest, Stan Davis, who's the founder and executive director of the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence. Stan and I are members of the Philadelphia Seminar. I've seen him, and he promotes his program, and I've been around him. He's really passionate about what he's doing and what he's committed to, and that has become his mission. And I wanted to share Stan, his story, and PMMC with our listeners. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back following these messages with our guest, Stan Davis, the founder and executive director of the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Stay tuned.
We'd like to welcome everybody checking in from Real Media Player, from Windows Media Player, from iTunes. We want to encourage everyone to log into our website, which is blakeradio.com, and become familiar with how you can access our broadcast directly from our website. And vice versa, those of you who check in directly from the Blake Radio Network, become familiar with how you can also access us through Real Media Player, through Windows Media Player, and iTunes by logging into their radio tuner guides and doing a search for us in the talk radio genre. You're listening to Rainbow Soul, talk radio at its best.
Hi, I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, inviting you to join me in financially supporting the Blake Radio Network on a regular basis. We need your continuing patronage to help the Blake Radio Network remain alive and thriving both now and well into the future. There are several easy ways you can send your contribution. To use PayPal, click on the help link on the Blake Radio Network's website at www.blakeradio.com, or you can go directly to the PayPal website and click the send money link. Type in rainbowsoul at blakeradio.com as the email address and Unlimited Ventures as the payee. Then follow the instructions. To send a check or money order, make it out to Unlimited Ventures, care of Neil Blake, and mail it to 73 Ireland Place, that's Ireland Place, Suite 109, Amityville, Amityville, New York, 11701. It's easy, painless, and uncomplicated. And you'll feel great after doing it, knowing you're keeping the Blake Radio Network alive and on the cutting edge of media technology. I'm Junius Ricardo Stanton, thanking you in advance for your support.
Junius Ricardo Stanton here with some truly great news. The Blake Radio Network has officially released the new Rainbow Soul iPhone and Android apps worldwide. Now there's also an HTML version for all other cell phones. The apps can be accessed from www.blakeradio.com on the Rainbow Soul page, or directly from the iPhone App Store or Android Market.
These apps will allow you to lock in exclusively to the Rainbow Soul broadcast with the touch of a button. These acquisitions complete the development and release of all the apps for the Blake Radio Network family of channels, which includes Rainbow Soul, the Alt Talk channel, and Music Massage, an eclectic mix of R&B, jazz, soul, and reggae slow jams for your listening edification and entertainment. So take full advantage of this opportunity for connectivity and mobility by downloading your respective app from your source. Continue listening to the Blake Radio Network's Rainbow Soul and Music Massage. Our guest on today's program, on this segment of the program, is Stan Davis, is the founder and the executive director of the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence. And he's also a, you know, full disclosure, I know him because we're members of the Philadelphia Seminar, which is a program for the exchange of ideas where men come together and we talk about issues. We have people come in to brief us on world events, and he's very active in the movement to bring stability and peace for our young people in Philadelphia. So it's my pleasure to welcome you, brother. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. Share your background with us.
Well, it's not a whole lot to tell. Basically, I'm a product of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania public school system, ultimately just going on becoming a musician in middle school and in high school, and way back, I'm talking about in the 70s, you know, we back then a lot of us were just turning out musicians, and every other guy was either in a band or knew somebody was in a band. I went on to graduate not only from Edison High School, but I went on to Cheney back when it was a state college, and went on to Beaver College where I received my degree, and ultimately IUP, Indiana University of Pennsylvania, where I have my degree in music composition. And we started the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center just basically to get kids off the street to try and introduce music and music education to those that couldn't really afford it. So we target low-income families so that families can't use the excuse, I can't afford it, as a reason not to expose their children to art and culture.
Now, were you a working musician yourself? Were you in a band? Did you travel? You did locally? You didn't regionally? Or you were primarily a music teacher?
Yeah, we did a lot of music for a lot of years. For a lot of years, I lived here in Philly as a part of the East Coast Band. And East Coast Band, even though it was just a local band, we did a regular thing on Wednesdays and Thursday nights up in West Philly, 52nd and Walnut. It was a spot called the Hollywood Palace. And back in the day, it was a real jumping spot. And it was a real springboard for a lot of up-and-coming, you know, like wannabes. And folks would come out, and we had everything from the best and the worst. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of learning. A lot of us cut our teeth right on the stage at the Hollywood Palace. And people from recording artists to just local acts would come through, and we'd talk about music. We'd sit down and share experiences and learn from one another. And that's how a lot of it started in the beginning.
When you came through in Philadelphia, there were venues. I can remember going up to Pleasant Playground on Thursday nights in the mid-60s. They had a jazz there. You know, guys would come in, sit in, play, jam, and the community could come in. I remember, you know, listening to Del Shields. They had the Jazz at Home Record Club, and they had, you know, WHAT FM was playing jazz. Uh-huh. Del Shields was playing jazz on DAS FM. And so you had a lot of clubs. So what's the scene like now? I mean, I mean, I know that there are various types of venues, and I know that there are different types of genre. Now there's cool jazz, there's straight ahead, and real, and all of that. But what is the environment for a young person who wants to come up and be introduced to music, performing in the jazz genre? What's it like now?
That's real funny. It's a very interesting question, simply because things have changed and music has changed so much now that a lot of the young people are trying to do a reach back, if you will. And they're kind of coming up and wanting to stop doing that synthetic music that was so popularized in the late 80s and 90s. And they're reaching back to try and learn music so that they can incorporate real music into what some of the artists are doing today. And so many of them, kind of got lost in transition with a lot of the synthetic music. I don't have anything against synthesizers, but all it does is replicate strings, horns, if you will, things of that sort. Even the drummer, a lot of drummers lost their gig because you would have just one guy with a keyboard and he's pushing keys and pretty much just imitating different instruments and coming up with something that was less than real, less than pure music. And so a lot of the young people today are going and finding, they call us old heads now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're reaching back and asking, so what did you do back in the day? And we were saying, there are no shortcuts in music. There are no shortcuts. You sit down, you have to put your time in. It's a commitment like a marriage. You get in and you sit down with your instrument, even with the kids that I teach today. In the beginning, we tell the parents, you know, encourage your kid in the very beginning just to practice about 15, 20 minutes a day, no more, because they don't need to get into a zone where kids be wanting to, oh, I'm working on this, and they want to do an hour or two. Oftentimes, you can get that hour or two, and then they won't practice anymore throughout the week. It's much better if a kid, a young budding musician, takes a short portion every day. If my time from, 5 to 5:30 is my time to practice my instrument, and I do it every day, the parents a lot of times will be respectful of that time, and they won't be asking a little junior to go to the store during that time, or the friends won't be calling and wanting to talk because they know that this is their time to practice. And a lot of times the kids can really go ahead and develop and hone their craft with a real routine.
Mm-hmm. When I was in school, we had music. And even if you couldn't sing or you didn't play an instrument, you had to learn what the notes meant. You had to learn, and it was for a general curriculum. It wasn't specialized, so we were all learning how to songs, pitch, things like that. Now, with the economic catastrophe, I'm calling it, that has befallen many school systems and education in general and a lot of cities and municipalities, one of the first things they cut out are art and music. So how is that impacting young people today?
You know what? I hate to get personal about that, but to me that's such a crime, and it's simply because so many of the school systems are cutting arts programs, and I know that there are some sports programs that say that they're being cut, but you by and large see the cut of arts programs much quicker than the sports programs, and I just tend to wonder why they tend to think that one is more important than the other. There is no rule in life that says you can't be a jock and an artist. And you have basketball players and football players and baseball players that will sit down at a piano or grab a guitar and can easily be proficient on their artistic expression as they can on their athletic expression. And the worst part about it is many of the people that call the shot, that are actually cutting these programs, are people that actually benefited from these programs when they were the age of the students that are suffering today.
Mm-hmm. I was just reading something earlier today. I was very critical of Western education because the person was writing that it tends to focus primarily on the left hemisphere. You're talking about math, types of linear type orientation. And the right hemisphere, which is about creativity, which is about just tapping into a vast reservoir of inspiration, is virtually ignored. And so when you cut out art and music, you're cutting out that part of education that stimulates the right hemisphere. I mean, when, and you know from dealing with young people, when you're in early stages of school, before they get into the linear logic orientation, there's a lot of clapping, there's a lot of dancing, singing, and so you have that stimulus and that is minimized later. So now when you take everything out that focuses primarily on the right hemisphere, you become an unbalanced person. So what, from as a musician, what can we do to rectify that, given it now is the policy to cut out art and music first? I mean, that's the first thing that goes on the chopping block.
Well, you know what? In my personal opinion, I think that when you have conversations such as this, it can easily become a debate where you have many people that bring different opinions to the table. So I say that to say that I'm very opinionated, but I'm quick to know that it's just that, an opinion. And in our program, we teach that one of the things that we teach is that repetition breeds familiarity. And we'll take a child as young as 6 years old, and we're saying repetition breeds familiarity. Well, for a youngster, we recognize that that's a mouthful. That's an earful, if you will. And we take a moment and say, okay, what does that mean? Basically, just saying practice makes perfect. You have to keep on doing something over and over in order to get more familiar and more comfortable with it. Another thing that we say to try and reinforce that is four words: difficult maybe, impossible never. And that's to say that you might be struggling with it right now, but music is not supposed to be easy. It's supposed to be rewarded. So as you work and develop your skills, what you end up getting is bragging rights, because I worked hard on it. I finally got it. Now listen to this. You know, and youngsters, their eyes light up a lot of times with that. And what we point out is that ultimately music and mathematics are synonymous. You know, it's virtually impossible to be good as a technical musician and do poorly in basic math, especially when it comes to fractions and breaking down percentages. When they start to count as musicians count, I tell them that as musicians we count, we're only counting like to four. But when we count differently than non-musicians, because we break it down evenly and in equal increments. And once they start to get it, they subliminally realize that, oh, my math scores are going up. I didn't even see that. You look around and the teacher's called asking questions and their hands are going up more and more. And they start to slowly realize it's benefiting because of what I'm learning in music class. That, again, goes back to explain why I'm so devastated that people would even dare to cut these programs when these programs can have a direct effect on the kids and how they work out music and math and the correlation between the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other thing, as with anything, you talked about repetition, but you're also instilling discipline, perseverance, and persistence in the child as they learn how to manipulate the various instruments. And the fact that you said it takes time. It's not a thing where you can just program a playback machine and you get a series of beats, or like you said, imitating various instruments. This is work, and it has a personal benefit to you, a sense of accomplishment, as well as a creative empowerment to it.
You know what? That you make a really good point there, because we definitely live in that microwave society when we want everything that we want in about 60 seconds or less. We want to be, okay, show it to me, now I got it. And when you try and explain to kids that there are no shortcuts in music, you're going to have some that are not going to be quickly acclimated to want to just receive that. You know, why can't I get it now, now, now? And you try and explain that patience is a virtue. This is something that we've learned, and this is an age-old process. You know, this is the way to do it, and there are no shortcuts. You look around, and you have some that will grab it and some that will want to resist in the beginning. But with our program, we're not only teaching music, but we're using music three ways. One, as a communication tool. One, also as a coping mechanism. And lastly, as a stress reliever. One of the things we point out to the kids, you might sit down, come in from anything that could have happened at school that might be stressing you out. And I would sit down, well, because I'm a pianist, sit down at my instrument, and you can not bang in a way that's destructive, but you can hit hard and play a piece that brings out your passion. And they can see that you're playing with a high level of passion and intensity, and see you working it out in your instrument. Or another time, when you're in a more serene mood, you may play something that reflects that. You know, so a lot of times we want to teach kids, not only do you want to learn to play songs, but you want to learn how to express your own personality through these pieces.
We're speaking with Stan Davis, who is the founder and executive director of the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence. How did you start the program and why?
Well, you know what? We are a faith-based entity, and I tell the story all the time. Actually, it's a true story that just being a Christian and a man of faith, I really was resistant to the idea of starting. I already had my job, and I was driving bus and working a regular job, but it was coming to me pretty much in a dream, and it was a religious experience for me because I was resistant myself. And going into prayer, I would ask God to take this idea away from me. And it was pretty much, very much like, well, no, I have this for you. And I was resistant, saying, well, give it to this one. You know, I'll be his right-hand man. I'll work hard. I'll help them develop it. And he said, no, it's not for him. It's for you. And by and large, when I stopped resisting, then I started getting excited about it. And I would go from sometimes 2, 3 in the morning, get up, and my wife would ask, where are you going? I'm going downstairs to the computer. And she would ask, well, why? And I would say, well, I'm working on a business plan. And she just didn't understand that this was something that was given to me. And in truth, I'm working on a business plan not having any idea of how to work or how to develop a business plan. But the more I thought of it, I thought, well, Noah didn't know how to build an ark either. And so with that being the case, I just worked on it. I did a little bit of internet research, and the more I talked about it with people, they would ask questions, and oftentimes I would say, and I realized that every time they asked a question and I wasn't easily able to answer, that meant that I had more research to do. And I did more research and more research, and my questions started sounding a little bit more like it was making sense, and things started coming together.
Well, give us an overview of the program when it started, and then bring us up to speed to where you are right now.
Well, ultimately, we started out in 08. So we're still relatively newly formed nonprofit. We started in 2008 as a bona fide nonprofit 501c3 entity, and we actually opened our doors in 2009. And we opened our doors in 2009, and we really started the very, very humble beginnings. And we started at the time right out of just one location, which was Bible Way Free Will Baptist Church of Mount Airy. And in Mount Airy, at Mount Pleasant and Wolston, we spoke to the church and the administrators and the pastor, and we laid down the entire business program. We started it out as one day a week on Tuesdays. And since then, we've continued to work and continued to build, and we've stretched out, and we're continued to be at Bible Week Church. We're also doing a summer program right now at the Agape Church on Wadsworth Avenue in Mount Airy. We are right now about to open a Chester branch of the PMMC music program. And I don't need to tell you that Chester, just like Philadelphia, when it comes to violence and crime, has lost its mind, just like our city. And so we're about to take a branch of PMMC to Chester, which will be opening in September. And that'll be at the Asbury AME Church on Providence Avenue in Chester. And we also do a series of it, a portion of it, actually, out of my own as well.
Mm-hmm. So how many people are on staff in terms of the instructors?
We have 8 instructors right now, with myself making 9. And we keep a 10-to-1 teacher-student ratio. So if I go into a class, I can go into as many as 10 children. As soon as we get one more, we add another teacher. So we keep the 10-to-1 student-teacher ratio and keep that element intact at all times. We, just this past May, did our 2013 class. They do a spring recital. We'll be doing a fall recital as well. And there were 23 children for the spring recital. And each kid did a wonderfully spirited routine, and everybody brought something to the table. We actually have distributed a DVD now of our spring recital, and our music program continues to grow, slowly but growing.
Well, where do you get your students?
Actually, we promote throughout the community. We go to the elementary and middle schools, and with a box full of leaflets, we stand out, and we approach the administrators first to get permission, of course. And then when school is letting out and parents are picking up kids, we're talking to the parents. We shout a music program for kids ages 6 to 16. Music program for kids ages 6 to 16. And as they take them, hey, thank you. Look to hear from you. They can call us. They can look us up on the web and see part of what we're doing, who we are, and what we're about, and to see the schedule for when the next program will start. Because we start them off with an 8-week course, which is actually a piano course. Now, the piano course, even though the parent may say, well, my child wants to play saxophone, or my child wants to play guitar, and we let them know that this is a prerequisite, regardless whether they wanted to do vocals or drums, even if they're the little guy in the back of the orchestra holding a triangle just waiting to say ding. this is a prerequisite and what they need, because we use the piano. We say that all music theory begins at the piano, and that's how we approach it.
Now, do you teach theory? I mean, do you teach, you know, theory, composition, and all of that to these young folks?
Most definitely. Matter of fact, we use the piano as our springboard to be able to explain intervals, increments, sharps, and flats. We teach them how to count and how counting as a musician is so different from how they've always counted. As soon as you say, okay, class, everybody just raise your right hand, ball it up in a fist, and show me the number one, everybody immediately puts their pointer out, and that's understandable. That's how you've been taught all your life up until now. I said, now that we're musicians, let's understand. And that in the right hand, the thumb is the one, the pointer is the two, your middle finger is your three, your four is your ring finger, and ultimately that pinky is number five. And so when we start talking about fingering numbers, one, two, three, four, five, then they understand how the fingering applies to the hand.
Well, you get the students. Is there a fee? Is there a cost associated with the program?
Well, yes, there is a cost, but we try to make sure that we keep everything minimal, again, so that parents cannot use the I can't afford it approach for a reason to not expose their children to art and culture. What we do, we have the initial 8 weeks, since we approach it for low-income families, the way that we try to do it is to let everybody know that even though the day of $45 an hour classes are gone, you know, we do almost half that. Even though the lessons are $25 an hour, what we do originally for low-income families, those that qualify can have up to 90% of their tuition subsidized. So they can come in at a $25 an hour class, those that qualify as little as $2.50 per class. Now, what we found out was that we had many people that were calling originally saying, well, what if we don't qualify? What if we don't qualify? Well, we had to take a different approach. So the eight-week class actually starts out at $99. This is for anybody, for everybody. And once we get in, we'll have those that would like to fill out the paperwork to see if they qualify. And if they qualify, they can continue after that at the subsidized rate.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple of times at the seminar, you've come to the seminar and some of the members contributed. Some of the members contributed instruments. So is that available? Do you have that option for the public? And if so, how can people get more information and send you, instruments or a donation?
We have our website, which is our primary avenue whereby people can contact us, and our website address is www.pmmc4kids.org. Again, that's PMMC, the number 4, KIDS.org. And at PMMC4kids.org, one can go on, again, see some of what we are and what we're about. It lets you see our 501c3 status. On there's a link for instrument donations, and also a link for if you'd like to make a financial donation. Any financial donations go in to support the program whereby we can continue to teach the kids. If you have a used instrument, whether it's in working condition or not, we would quickly say, before you throw it in the trash, donate it to us. Give us an opportunity to see if it can be repurposed. And we would take that opportunity to refurbish this instrument and ultimately put it in the hands of youth that are learning instruments. We teach almost all of the instruments of the orchestra. We don't teach the harp, and I don't have a tuba yet.
You do xylophones or vibes and stuff?
Yes, we do. We do xylophone, bells, vibes, and glockenspiel. We do flutes, recorders. We do saxophones, that's soprano, alto, and tenor. We do both acoustic guitar and electric guitar. We do a bass guitar. And, of course, we play piano, keyboards, and organ.
Mm-hmm.
We do clarinet as well.
All right. Now, they'll see your address on your website, but give your address because, you know, this is not just a local program. You're going to be heard all over the world. So we have a global listenership, and those people who elect to come to the program because it's on demand. So
yeah.
give us a contact give us your URL for your website, give us your address and a contact number in case people want to follow up.
Okay, well, once again, for those that would like to contact us on the World Wide Web, we're at www.pmmc4kids.org. And for any that would be interested in making a donation, a monetary or used instrument donation, you would be able to send any donations through regular mail. Our address in Philadelphia is 941 East Durard Street, and that's spelled D-U-R-A-R-D, 941 East Durard Street in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, and the zip code is 19150. You would make any donation addresses made out to PMMC.
All right, now part of your title of your name is Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence. So where does the nonviolence come in?
Well, basically what we do is we're using music education to reduce violence in the community. We're using music and music education to teach our children that there is absolutely no reason in the world, just because two people disagree, that one should think that the other has no right to live any longer on this earth. Two people that disagree is just that, a disagreement. And we need to find a way to reach back a generation and teach people that we are all on this earth as a gift from God. Your life is as important as my life, and I don't have the right to extinguish that light. And so many times, daily, we are hearing, when we turn on the news, the first thing we hear about is who was murdered last night, whether it be domestic violence, whether it be road rage, if it's a playground assassination, just robberies and break-ins. And there are so many different ways that people are getting creative in ways to extinguish the life of others, and that we are really, really in a dire state. And so with so many young people today, they're committing these crimes, but they have kids. So we're reaching back past that generation, back to their kids. And so where people should be role models, we're teaching the kids how to be role models for their parents, so to speak.
Yeah, well, also the involvement during a critical time, because at one point I was a juvenile probation officer, and we realized that a lot of the incidents that brought young people to the attention of the court happened after school. Now, obviously, they also happened on the weekends, but generally speaking, a lot of incidents happened after school. So if they were engaged in activities after school in those critical times, 3:30 to 7, 8 o'clock, it tends to cut down the associations with the wrong people, being at the wrong place at the wrong time, and it gives them something to feel good about. It gives them something to focus on. And when I was coming up, the jocks and the musicians got respect from the gangs. They pretty much didn't bother them. So that's a plus. And again, if you're not trying to train up professional musicians, it makes for a better and more rounded person.
It really does. It really does, because you make a good point. It takes me back in my mind to school days. On the way home, every day we had to walk through gang territory. So that was just a part of life. And as we got into late junior high school and early high school, we found that walking down the street coming home with a saxophone case tended to make a difference. No, don't mess with them, man. And those words seem to be, in a sense, a lifesaver. No, don't mess with them, man. He's okay. And you just go through with your instrument, and it will kind of give you a pass. Not saying that that works always and at all times, but still, knowing that you have a young person that's on a mission, that has a bit of a focus, gives a person an opportunity to look the other way when they're looking for targets, when they're looking for victims. And another thing I'd like to point out is that in so many instances, they're looking to shut down also libraries and recreation centers. And the crime, the travesty in that is the fact that when you think of a library being closed, you have perpetrators, drug dealers, you name it, standing right across the street. And if the kids after school want to go and hang at a library or something, if the library is closed, the drug dealer can walk right across the street, start talking and start enlisting new recruits. And the same goes for the recreation centers. So that's why we try and offer an after-school program whereby the kids can come and have a place, a safe haven, if you will, where they're not only not hanging in the streets, but they're getting an opportunity to develop a skill, develop the inner artist, birth that inner musician, if you will, and start to bring them forward so that they can have something to present and to offer to this world that we live in.
Now, you have several sites in Philadelphia, and you're about to embark on bringing your program to Chester. So what thought process went to that, and what kind of preparation and logistical planning goes into something like that, number one? And number two, do you plan to replicate the program, say, in Wilmington or Camden or Trenton, you know, communities close by that are suffering from the same issues that plague Philadelphia?
Well, Chester right now is the first pilot that we are undertaking that is outside of the borders of Philadelphia. However, we're looking at this as the first opportunity, being hopefully the first of many, whereby we can begin to make the administrators of the schools and city council personnel to see if it's working in this city, why can't it work in ours? And hopefully we can begin to go from the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence to multiple cities with multicultural music centers for nonviolence as well. The other thing that we'd like to try and do is to try and keep, even if we begin to branch out, to keep each one networked into the other, so that it will, kind of like the internet, begin to build and have a cross link one to another, because we can all benefit one from another.
Yeah. And it could be like some of the sports programs that where you have this healthy competition. Say, remember growing up, you used to have the New York Philly basketball, you know, rivalry. And,
yes.
Throughout that, the athletes at the various levels, whether they stayed in it and went on to college or the pros, they got to meet other people, other young people similar to themselves, got to travel, and it makes for, a more well-rounded personality.
I believe in that wholeheartedly. Again, there's no rule that says you can't be a jock and an artist. And when people tend to shut down one program and diminish this value over another program, it just boggles my mind. And those that I have discussed it with, we all seem to be, you know, just flabbergasted by the fact that how can you not see the value in this in a child's life? You were one of the ones that benefited from this when you were young. We all sat in the auditorium and watched the cartoon with Peter and the Wolf, where none of the cartoon characters spoke. It was a different musical instrument from the orchestra that was the duck, that was the wolf, that was this one and that one. And afterward, we had that engaging conversation. Did you hear the oboe? Did you hear the bassoon? Did you hear the French horn? And then they would show you a picture of the instrument and a person playing that instrument, and then you could hear it. As a child, it made me say, oh, now I see it. Now I see it. And when I go home, I started listening to the TV shows, and there were just stories, I mean, that I would hear just watching TV. I loved the theme from The Lone Ranger. Those trumpets in the beginning just blew me away. I love the big orchestra, the theme from I Love Lucy. I love Peter Gunn, Star Trek theme. All of these shows just, instead, I would just hear it in a whole different light after I started being exposed to the music.
Mm-hmm. How can people become involved in what you're doing, whether you want to be a music instructor, a counselor or whatever? And I know dealing with young people, you have to have a background check and a state police clearance, at least in Pennsylvania anyway. So what other prerequisites are there?
Well, thank you for asking. We have two types of volunteers in our program. We have those that would need child abuse clearance and criminal background check for those that would work directly with the children. That's a mandate. But if you would like to, and you say, well, I'm not sure whether I can do that, well, we have other volunteers as well. We have clerical, we have administrative, we have all types, even those that come in and just help maintain. I'm talking about everything from janitorial services to administrative assistants and all types of things. We have plenty of people that work with PMMC that don't work directly with children, but also musicians that can work directly with children in the show. But, of course, we would cover the cost of the clearances. You just need to be able to pass them.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about pastors and organizations who have spaces? Because to me, one of the biggest travesties is so many buildings in our community that we own, whether it's a mosque, a church, and a few, you know, black Hebrew Israelites or black Hebrews that have buildings, they go unused the vast majority of the time. So what about someone who has a building that they want to make available to you? How would they go about that?
If they would like to give us, like I said, you can always go on the internet to contact us. If they would like to begin any type of communication regarding the establishment of a new satellite site, we would be more than happy to look into an interest in doing such. We want to keep in mind that in doing this, we are looking to spread and expand. However, just letting you know our mindset, we're not looking to put a half dozen sites on, let's say, Germantown. If we had half dozen sites, we'd much rather have one in Kensington, one in Southwest Philly, one in West Philly, one in Germantown, Mount Airy, one in North Philly, where there definitely is a great need for our services.
Mm-hmm.
And we try and spread it around like that. But anybody who has an interest, we welcome their approach to try and start any communication towards the development of a satellite site.
What would you like to see short-term beyond the replication in Chester and then long-term for this program?
Ultimately, I would like to see this program go nationwide, and it doesn't matter whether it would go under my headship so much or just as long as it had an opportunity to benefit children, primarily from low-income families. And I stress that because statistics have clearly shown that we have more crime, more victims of crime, more perpetrators of crime that come from low-income families and low-income housing than in other demographics. And so I would just like to see an opportunity, a way to to help offset some of that crime that's so rampant throughout our nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, are there anything else that you feel that people need to know about you or the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence that we haven't covered thus far?
Well, the one thing that I wouldn't want to be misconstrued because of my personal beliefs and because we are a faith-based initiative, I wouldn't want someone to think that, I'm of whatever denomination, that they would not be welcome, because the fact is we welcome all denominations and we welcome all points of view and we welcome all demographics and we welcome all ethnic groups. We don't discriminate, and we would like to see children learn to love instead of children learning to hate.
Yeah, well, that's a major, major challenge in itself, because we are being taught to... Well, first of all, we're being desensitized by the media every day, but we're being taught to demonize and hate the other at a rate that has never seen anything like it in human history before. So anything that can alter that can shift the balance back to just being more tolerant and being more accepting of the human family is a major, major plus.
Well, one of the things that, and I know that we don't have time to go off on another conversation, so I won't give any personal opinions of the Trayvon Martin situation, but it would be remiss of me to not at least touch on the fact that these two individuals, I'm talking about one that was armed, one that was not, one ended up dead, and I'll say no more about that except a lot of people are looking at it as a boy and a man, where the one that is looked at as a man is actually very young. These are two young people that really needed to have less hate taught to them throughout their lifetime. And we could have easily had a much different outcome. I'll add to that the fact that with all of this going to trial, I'll say just simply, with our American justice system, maybe you would look and see that they may not be what we think they are, but it's not a surprise, the outcome of the verdict.
Yeah, well, I wasn't surprised. I mean, I anticipated, but I thought it was going to come out. They were going to manipulate it to be either a hung jury or a mistrial, and then they would drag it out even further and further, and so he would get off. But I was shocked that he just walked off.
It might be disappointing to all of us, but it's not surprising.
No, it's indicative of the wide disparity in values, worldview, and just perspectives. Because it's almost like the O.J. Simpson trial, where black people generally had one view and white people, at least the views that are espoused by, for the most part, mainstream media, are told they're worlds apart. And so all this does is you know, widen the already gaping divide that goes back hundreds of years.
Yeah, but what happened to the phrase, a jury of your peers? Where were both sides represented on that jury? But I'm sure that we don't have time to discuss that.
No, but I mean, it's germane because it was a tragedy, and it was a travesty. I worked in the justice system, and I would tell people it's not fair. You know, I saw every day that the police had wide discretion in who they arrested, what they charged them with, if they arrested them at all, if they intervened at all. Sometimes, for example, there was a situation where somebody took a young person's bike or they got into a fight. Certain sections of the city in Philly, as you well know, the police might intervene. They'd take the boy back to his parents with a reprimand, or they retrieve the bicycle, nothing's happened. In another mm-hmm. section of the city, they just go full bore to arrest anybody who even remotely has on the what I call the uniform that the young people wear. And so oftentimes the wrong people would be arrested and end up with a record simply because they wore the same clothing that
they appealed.
Yeah, and they lived in the immediate vicinity, or they were in the immediate vicinity.
Mm-hmm. It's where we are as a society at this point.
Yep. But that's something for a different day. So give us your contact information, your URL, your address, if people want to send a donation. Now, can they make? Do you have PayPal? Or do you have? You can do e-commerce on your website.
We do not at this point, being still a newly formed nonprofit. These things are still in the developmental stage, but we will be working towards making that happen. And I want to take this time to thank you, Mr. Junior Stanton, for giving us an opportunity to let your listeners know about the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence and what we're doing to use music education to reduce violence in the community. We are geared toward low-income families and making sure that we have music and music education available for any of those that would like it. I can't say enough about what you're doing in and about the community, so thank you for that. But with PMMC, we are, once again, PMMC4Kids.org, PMMC4Kids.org. And for those that need our mailing address, we can be reached PMMC at 941 East Durard Street in Philadelphia, PA. That's 19150. And if I didn't pronounce it well enough, Durard is spelled D-U-R-A-R-D.
Okay, well, just a full disclosure, we've been talking about this for months. We finally got around to it, so I'm glad to be of service. I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing, and we thank you because we need to do whatever we can to save the children. And having said that, I'll let you go. We thank our guest, Stan Davis, for what he's doing in Philadelphia and around Philadelphia and soon to be Chester, Pennsylvania. There are millions of Stan Davises out there trying to make a difference in young people's lives, improving the community, building bridges, intergenerational bridges, to help our communities and the world be a better place. So if there's a Stan Davis in your neighborhood, make sure you give them support, pat on the back. If they need some money, need some volunteers, make sure you tell their story and help them help us make this world a better place. Again, the contact information for the Philadelphia Multicultural Music Center for Nonviolence is PMMC4Kids, K-I-D-S, at O-R-G. And he'll be glad that you took the time to inquire about ways that you can be supportive of what he's doing, because he's doing a fantastic job and rendering a fantastic service to the children of Philadelphia and Chester, Pennsylvania. And according to the clock on the wall, that's just about all. It's time for us to get out of here. And as always, this is Junius Ricardo Stanton encouraging you to engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow. And make every effort to find meaning, purpose, and fulfillment in your life so that you evolve into all that the Creator intends for you to be. And your life manifests magnificently as the Creator, as you, on this plane, and the world is a better place because you are here. Till next time, stay strong.
Diverse faith is a faith that no army with artillery invades, where no military
You've been listening to the Cyberspace Sanctuary, a safe house for your mind on the Blake Radio Network with Junius Ricardo Stanley. Thank you for logging on. We invite you to tune in again and engage in mental decolonization. Free your mind, the rest will follow.
That no corporation incorporates, no denomination faith dominates, and no court is going to try any.